Hi, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us on This Side of the Wire. Today, we're thrilled to welcome Trina Watt, the head of marketing at Rivos. Rivos is pioneering industry-leading service solutions built on RISC-V architecture. They're focusing on the unique demands of Gen AI and data analytics. Their technology combines market-leading power efficiency, high performance, and robust security to support the future of compute-intensive workloads. Trina, who is also an excellent pool player, is a seasoned professional who has built an impressive career across engineering and senior marketing roles, from fast-paced startups to leading global tech companies. With a background in electronic and electrical engineering from the University of Strathclyde in Scotland, Trina has a unique talent for transforming complex technical concepts into impactful marketing strategies that drive real business value. Trina is joining us just about 1 week after the RISC-V summit in Santa Clara, California, where the RISC-V community made a lot of news, including the ratification of the RVA23 profile, highlights of which include vector extensions for AI and machine learning, along with cryptography workloads, and a hypervisor extension to enable virtualization on enterprise workloads. According to data out of last week's summit, the number of SoCs using RISC-V cores stood at 2 billion for 2024, and that number will increase to 20 billion by 2031. So an impressive string of growth already, and a pretty solid future. Thank you for joining us today, Trina. Why don't we start the conversation with a little bit of an introduction. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and explain what RISC-V is and how it might differ from traditional instruction sets?
Hi, RJ. Great chatting again. Thanks for inviting me along to talk today. The RISC-V is at a really exciting point. You know, I think that's what came out of the summit last week, was that the kind of confidence and actually seeing the potential of RISC-V moving into the reality. You know, when you're shipping kind of 2 billion units, it's a reality. It's here, it's happening. So just to give a bit of a kind of education to anyone who's not familiar with RISC-V. So RISC-V is an open source instruction set. And a lot of people go, well, what is that? So most of the instruction sets that are out there, say from ARM, from Intel, are more proprietary, and it's controlled and managed by one company. By being open source, it means it's controlled and managed and contributed to by a community. So it's very much like the open source software community, but done for open source hardware. So what that does is it brings a whole range of knowledge and experience to play on RISC-V, to really accelerate it forward, to enable it to address multiple markets. So it's really a very different way of working. Open source is familiar in software. You're now going to become familiar with it in the hardware through RISC-V. And what that does also is it just opens up innovation. You know, it means a community can then know, well, that part of the architecture is going to be supported by the community. So I can go and focus on my innovation. I can focus on my differentiation. So it just brings a different attitude and aspect to the process and marketplace.
Great. I know that there's usually a long sort of roadmap or road to adoption for anything this integral. How has RISC-V been received in different industries? Is there faster pickup in one industry or another? Is it being used for AI, IoT, automotive?
So we're seeing, I mean, different markets take different lengths of time to get all the kind of software aspects together. So initially, IoT space has been the first area where we've seen the really large uptake in RISC-V through companies like Andes, who have offered a wide variety of solutions for that space. And RISC-V is expected to be 30% of that market space by 2028. So wow. You can see really the breadth there and the software is in place. So you've got a really good established IoT market. And from that, markets grow from it. So automotive is a much more involved space from a software, from a regulatory perspective, from a standards perspective. And some of those markets take a bit longer to get all the pieces in place. So automotive, there is a lot of progress going on, and you'll see a lot of organizations like Sci5 and people like that who are putting a lot of emphasis onto automotive. So I would say you would see a kind of similar kind of critical mass being reached in 5 to 10 years timeframe for risk five. AI, you can't go anywhere without seeing the word AI being applied to absolutely everything that is going on. Mm-hmm. So AI is our next evolution. And I think some of them will work and will absolutely see the value. Some of the things that we're talking about from AI probably will disappear. It's a little bit like ringtones in your mobile phone were the most important thing that people wanted. They wanted screenshots on their laptops. You don't really think about these things now, but they were kind of critical at the time. So I think the key piece for AI is the pace of evolution. I mean, ChatGPT is the fastest end consumer app to reach 100 million. It did it in 3 months. Nothing else has got closer to that. So you've got a pace of movement in AI that is redefining a lot of things, and some of that will work and some of that won't work. What I see as a critical point, and where I think RISC-V will really start to gain some momentum, is into kind of enterprise, into the data center, into the automotive space, where the bringing together of a community of knowledge can often make it move faster. You can see early indicators of things changing. You can pull the different pieces together. So I think that will be critical as well. The other thing that came out at the RISC-V summit, which was really interesting, was NVIDIA talking about how they use RISC-V cores. And they, for 2024, will ship a billion RISC-V cores within their products.
So, according to that number, half of the RISC-V cores shipped this year will have been NVIDIA chips?
Uh-huh, within NVIDIA chips. So some of the NVIDIA chips have up to 30 RISC-V cores doing different functions spread across their products. So what you can see there is that benefit of a company of that size who can have control over their stack as well to basically build their own profiles, mm-hmm. build and have that flexibility to do that themselves and to have full control and full flexibility. So that is something that's not been readily available to organizations in the past. So RISC-V is going to then start to appear in places and end use cases that you wouldn't expect. You may see some automotive companies maybe doing their own, you know, or some data center companies doing their own. So you feel now that RISC-V has now got this opportunity to open up new use cases and open up elements that are much more customized to different companies' needs.
So when I think back to the different architectures out there, and this is, you know, I'm not an engineer, I'm, you know, just sort of tertiarily in the tech industry, but it feels like for x86, the killer app was the personal computer, whether that was your PC or your laptop, whatever. And then it feels like for ARM, the killer app was the mobile phone or mobility, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
Does it feel to you like AI might be the key driver behind the adoption of RISC-V?
I think it's one of them. I think it's AI still got a lot of unknowns. And I think RISC-V is being grounded in known use cases. But I think what it helps us is for new use cases like AI is that flexibility, is that ability to control. You know, companies can decide to adopt a profile like RVA23, where they know there will be a software stack built on top of that. So the software vendors can port knowing that that underlying hardware, that their software will work. But it hasn't closed the door to the ability to customize, to bring your own extensions in, to do that tailored element of it, of still bringing a lot of the benefits of the community, whilst having some of that flexibility around making it customizable to an end use. So I think you'll see AI will drive some of this forward. And I think AI is going to really drive the co-design between software and hardware. In the past, you've tended to see hardware design first and then software layers on top. Now, you don't have the time benefit of that. Software is driving the pace and will drive the pace for AI. So you've got to be able to design your hardware to be able to flex, to programmable, and to be able to be designed alongside the software. And I think that with Risk Five, now that we've got kind of strong software ecosystem being built, got a strong hardware ecosystem, but the two work very co-locked together, you're enabling that across the industry. So I think that's going to be a key critical bit to really turn AI on in more places.
Mm. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about were some of the challenges associated with RISC-V adoption. And as I'm listening to you talk about customization and the flexibility of this, I guess one of my questions, or sort of an extension of the question around challenges, is fragmentation a challenge?
Yeah, and that's why the profiles are really important, you know, because you've got suddenly all this flexibility and you need to have places where you can solidify. And solidifying around the profiles, both from a hardware and from a software perspective, is really important for a lot of marketplaces. So that is key to enabling that fragmentation to be managed. You can choose whether you come away from a profile. You know, and if you're on the profile, the fragmentation will be minimal to negligible. You can then choose to come off it and do your own customize, but that's a choice. And then you would handle your software stack accordingly. In the way that NVIDIA has chosen to do their own profiles because it works for what they need. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds, but you're choosing it. It's not being enforced on you. So I think the profiles are really important, especially as we move to the higher performance points. You see a lot of the kind of extensions that have come into the RVA 23 have been about enabling those higher performance, those high reliability type end use cases. So I think software, building the software ecosystem, is always the longest pole in any architecture. You know, you can go back to looking at x86, to ARM, to any of the other ones, and it is always the one that takes the longest, and especially because you're going across market spaces. But what you can see more now is there's crossover between market spaces. So any of the work that is done in the Linux space can enable top-end edge, it can enable aspects that are going in automotive and into data centers. So it's not complete isolation. There is kind of like coalescing between these different market areas. There'll then obviously be specific end use cases and apps and things like that that will build on top. But you're getting that benefit. You're not having to start from scratch for each market area. So the software ecosystem is strengthening, it's broadening, it's maturing, it's hardening. So I think that challenge, that is a diminishing challenge, definitely for RISC-V. You feel as if they've broken the back of it. And like last year, Google announced that they will do Android for RISC-V. So you're seeing these key component parts being put in place. So which again will then open up new markets. Android and RISC-V, you open up all the use cases for Android. So again, these key software pieces coming brings new opportunities.
So that's kind of a really nice bridge or segue to the next question I have, which is, bring out your crystal ball for me. Tell me how you see RISC-V influencing future innovation, either in hardware or software. But is this going to, when I think of all of the rich innovation that happened on top of ARM, when we had this instruction set that was, you know, had a much smaller power envelope and was much more flexible, and the work that ARM did with TSMC to make it easy to just do things from a fabless perspective, we saw a ton of innovation in the smartphone market. It's almost like a Cambrian explosion. If you kind of step back and say, okay, this is a whole new generation of thinking, it's open source, it's software and hardware kind of happening at the same time, what do you see? I mean, I know this is the hardest question ever, but like, how do you see innovation changing? What? Tell me what's going to be new.
I think you've now got the chance. You've got a little bit of the control over the costs. So that is one of the things. It probably lowers the barrier to entry from a cost perspective, because it's no licensing fees and no royalty fees. So I think from that side of things, you can maybe bring people into the industry who wouldn't have been able to consider it. But I think if you go and you look at open source software, you know, I remember when Linux first came out and said, oh, all the proprietary stuff's going to die, it's all going to go away, it's not going to longer be needed. Look at us now, like 20 plus years on, and we have both proprietary and we have open source solutions. We have proprietary solutions that use open source parts. So what I think you see here, we're not going to lose. There's always going to be some proprietary element. There'll be some companies that will bring something special to the marketplace. And then there will be people who use like open source components. In the same way you have Android is based on Linux, you've got, you know, all sorts of open source elements all the way through the software stack. I think you'll see that in hardware stacks. You're going to see complements. You're going to see people bringing out the differentiation, taking a different approach. And I think what you then do is as this market explodes, and it will explode with AI, what will win and not win is still to be unknown. I would not want to try and predict that one at the moment. But it will. Things will. So I think what you have underneath that and to really enable some of those is having that innovation, that differentiation, that different way and working together. Mm-hmm. And that's quite the interesting thing from Revo's point of view. Recently, we've licensed an Andes core to use within our next product. We went, they've got a really good core. We don't have to focus on it. We can go and focus on our differentiation. So we'll license it. So you've got all this building as well throughout this kind of community. So for my, I wouldn't want to, crystal ball's a tough one, but I see some mirroring of what has gone on in the software area that absolutely I will see that will happen in the hardware area as well.
Great. Well, we're going to have you back on this podcast in 5 years and we're going to go through and evaluate all of the innovation that's happened on top of RISC-V.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
I think you and I both have a shared history with Arm, and they're one of my favorite companies, organizations, just some great people there. But with their sort of the change in ownership, do you think that has any implications for RISC-V? Do you feel like that is has been a catalyst for RISC-V or no?
No, I don't see it. I think the market all around us is changing, and you know it. Just what we were saying about open source software and how that changed. I think it was just a kind of a matter of time, and you know, RISC-V came along with a really nice clean architecture that was accessible to a lot of people on the back of open source and software has become the norm. So saying how about open source and hardware to be the norm, it came at a time where I think it was being acceptable in the industry. So no, I think with RISC-V addresses different areas to ARM in the same way. Mm-hmm. ARM has a huge established ecosystem, partnership, users. I see there's space in the market for more than one architecture. So I don't think what's been happening with ARM and all the kind of discussions recently has had an effect on RISC-V. It had started to move before that.
Right. So parallel
yeah,
lives.
Yeah, absolutely. In the same way you still have Microsoft, Windows, and you have Linux. You still have it. You know, you have macOS. You have these operating systems which are proprietary, but you also have these open source based ones and they can coexist. You can bring out the strengths for different organizations in their end products. So there's an opportunity to coexist, absolutely.
I want to sort of my last question for you is just a little bit about what you're doing at Revo's. I know you recently made the move over there. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing for them.
Yeah. So Revo's is just kind of coming out of stealth mode at the moment. So most people probably won't have heard a lot about Revo's, and that will change in upcoming months and years. Revo's has been very actively involved in the RISC-V organization. So in particular, at the top end, you know, addressing the server needs, both from the hardware and the software side of things. So the summit recently, we had numerous presentations, including a keynote about, you know, what we can do for RISC-V and how Revo's has been involved in it. So we are focused very much on designing hardware solutions, but with software as a starting point. So the workloads, what are the software needs, and co-designing that with the hardware. So that has been the approach from the start. And I can't share much about the products yet, but I will. But you will continue to see Rivos talking more about Gen AI, AI in general, and data analytics, and the bringing together of those points at the server space. So that is what is driving us forward, and that's what you hear us talking about in the future more.
Great. Sounds like exciting times there. I guess I lied. I guess I have one more question for you. For any of our listeners who feel like they want to get a little bit more up on RISC-V, do you have any recommendations, any sort of resources or educational sites to go to?
Yeah, so it's great. If you want to start about RISC-V, go to RISC-V International's website. It's a great starting point. So there's a lot of education elements, there's a lot of blogs, but what it also does is it gives you where there are meetups happening, where there are community events happening in a local city. So you can just type in your city and you can find out local activities that are going on. So it means you can start to find out a little bit more about RISC-V, getting involved in the community. And it really has very much the same kind of approach and ethos to open source software. It's a very much a similar kind of working process. So that's a good place to start.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Trina. As always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you, everybody, for joining us and tuning in today. If you have questions, please leave a comment down below so that we can keep the conversation going. We also welcome you to connect with and follow each of us on LinkedIn. We've included Trina's LinkedIn link as well. So we'll see you next time on our next episode of This Side of the Wire.